Hello, welcome to Cannabis Marketing Live. I'm your host, Jake Litke, the CEO of MediaGel. And today we have Matt Taverna from Statera. Statera is a data company that, and actually, you know what, Matt, I'll let you introduce Statera.
Sure.
It's your business.
Yeah, we're a data solutions company. We build a 260 million person data set of everybody in the United States, and we then make that data actionable for advertising and outreach and analytics on pieces of that data. And so we have our roots are in state level regulation, state level politics, and we kind of have a really good way of kind of viewing the United States in states. And so that's how we kind of work in cannabis, using that, the same model of kind of viewing, the United States as kind of 50 states plus DC. And, we work with MediaGel and kind of other cannabis tech companies to make that data actionable and to help, end users, which, companies and brands, to make their own data actionable as well.
Great, thank you for that. The topic today is first party data and how you can use it both in targeting and retention measurement. We should probably start off the conversation by defining what is first party data. There's first party data, second party data, third party data, zero party data. Really, we're talking about first party data today. And I'd like to define it in the context of how first-party data is collected and utilized today in, let's say, the broader CPG industry, and then we get to how that.
So I think the kind of top lines on the differences between first, second, and third. Second, third-party data are data sets and data that you'd buy from someone like me, that is kind of consumer data. That is based on different kind of consumer behaviors that are known, that are kind of made from things for like when you sign up for a warranty card or your CVS card or your grocery store card. The benefit of you getting those discounts is that you can have discounted groceries, but then that grocery store actually has that data and actually can sometimes sell that data. First party data is data that companies kind of keep kind of closer to the vest and collect themselves. And it's data that comes from points of sale. It's data that comes from things like loyalty programs, different kind of opt-ins for, like text messages. And it's data that is owned and operated by a company. So the lack of a better term, it's like your customer list. And so the way it's collected again is through those different kind of feeds of different software sets that companies have. And it's largely used in traditional CPG workflows to kind of like predict customer behaviors. And to see, what kind of inventory you should be stocking and the trend of your business. But at a more granular level, it's used primarily to keep in touch with customers. So.
Right. So you've got a couple dimensions of data there. You've got the identity of the consumer. You have maybe a various types of contact information, could be phone number, email address, home address. And then you have behavioral data, which is what is the person purchasing? How often are they interacting with your retail location or delivery service? And then, we can talk about how you can leverage that data. Now, before we jump over to that, though, I want to touch on the fact that within the CPG industry, there's a healthy ecosystem of data sharing and data connections with large companies. And there's established ways that information flows back and forth. One of the things that we struggle with in the cannabis space is that the data is largely siloed, right? So you've got a POS system, you've got a compliance system, you've got a loyalty platform, but for the most part, none of those are connected to the ecosystem that you would traditionally see like a big box retailer have access to. So if you have your data siloed like that, what are the limitations that you're running into, as an owner of that data?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't give you kind of a full view of the customer. So, and it also leaves kind of like holes in some of the information that you're dealing with. So for instance, if you have a incomplete record on your loyalty program and you are trying to, maintain a relationship with your customer through like a text message or an email, and that isn't working, but then you have that customer on another software platform and you may have their phone number or a different phone number for them. Rather than giving up on them as a lapsed customer, it's another way you can engage with that customer. So kind of pulling all the data into one spot to making sure you're kind of able to pull out all the stops in customer engagement. That's number one. And number two is there are times when, because you're not recognizing that if someone gives you an email address on one piece of software and gives you a phone number on the other, if you don't make that connection, you're not even getting a full view of what that customer has bought. And so like their wallet size, their buying behavior with SKUs attached to it is kind of misrepresenting that person. So if there's kind of my name, Matt Taverna, if I go in and buy one product one day, and I'm signed in with my email address, I come in another day and I just come in as a regular customer, but I use my phone number. Making sure that those two sales are combined into the single record is really important. So you have a full view of, that customer, but also a full view of kind of that customer profile, which gets into the other use of kind of first party data to kind of like as a predictive element.
Yeah. And so if you have, this is again another space where I don't think there or at least hasn't been good solutions for doing data cleaning and data appending. This is something that Statera has the capability to do. I know because I've seen you do it, where you can take a customer record. Let's say you've got the very simple use case of a name. You have three columns of data. You've got a name, you have a phone number, you have email address, but then you have gaps, right? You have an email address for one person, phone number for another, maybe home address. Within the CPG industry, there's, like I said, again, established methods for going and taking that data, sending it to a data provider, getting that data filled in. But there's not a lot that really hasn't been too available in the Canvas space. Talk to me about how that usually works. If I were to do that, I were a retailer.
Yeah, I mean, I think the silos in Canvas are based on the fact that like we're building the plan as we take off here, and I think as an industry we're like very quickly catching up to best practices. But I think unfortunately what happens is that when there are established best practices, we have the legs cut out from under us. So if you look at kind of like some recent decisions from Twilio and some other software platforms traditionally you would use like a Twilio or another CRM as a way to combine all that data, those aren't available for cannabis brands and companies. And so having the data live in one spot is a challenge, and I think that's again it's one that's quickly kind of being solved. But I think also with an industry that is despite like very recent successes or like the kind of crystal ball of success with 280E and rescheduling and some other progress made just in the past couple of days on safe banking and elsewhere. Despite those, hopefully down the road successes, it's still an industry that there's a good sense of caution that goes along with handling data and customer data. So there has to be a certain amount of trust in where you're sending those data lists and who are the vendors that are able to do these things correctly for you to make sure you see that full customer view. And so those are the challenges, I think.
I've seen both sides of that. I've seen some businesses that are not as cautious as they should be with their first party data. And this is where we talk about, you know, PII, personally identifiable information. There are laws on what you can and can't do with it, how you're supposed to store it. Those laws vary by state in terms of opt-outs and how, where the data collection happened and what you can do with it. So I've seen people do things like just email customer lists around with PII, which you should not do. And then I've seen a lot of people that are taking a conservative approach and just not doing anything with their data because they're concerned. They don't know how much trouble they could get into. So they just play it safe and don't do anything. How do we help people understand the middle ground of, you know, just in broad strokes, like some basic don't do this, and here's what you can do if you're thoughtful. And when I'm talking about can do, what are the ways you can leverage that data for your business in terms of targeting or retention or analysis? I realize that's a broad question.
Yeah, I think dealing with any vendor, whether it's a data vendor or a software vendor, knowing what that vendor is allowed or not allowed to do with your data is really important. And obviously, this is best left to a lawyer, but what I usually say to a prospective customer or a colleague is that you should be able to look at the terms of what, you know, like very clearly in plain English, not legalese, know what the vendor's going to do with your data. And so like at Statera, we have, you know, pretty clear rules on data destruction that we will kind of do a project and then your data will not kind of stick around in our servers. We're not going to go use it for something else. We're not going to use it to create other products. We're not going to give that away to other, you know, your competitors or, you know, other clients. It's kind of knowing what is possible there. And then I think using the best practices on just like data security. So there are, you know, pretty easy ways to securely send data files. Things like Dropbox, box.com are kind of like very like industry standard kind of freeware, but freeware in a way that they're well known and they're secure. And then other data companies and vendors have like their own secure way of file transfers that they built on their own. And I think that there's also just like levels of security that you should be looking at. So there's kind of like, and a lot of this is common sense, but again, a lot of it is kind of based on laws and your attorney and the way that you should be kind of looking at levels of security. So if you're, you know, if it's, you know, one thing in particular that I really rely on our attorney and our customers' attorneys on, I don't mean to talk about lawyers the whole time here, is if you're a medicinal dispensary, it gets into a area of data that is kind of a true gray area for cannabis, because it does kind of take HIPAA into consideration. But again, there's a customer aspect to that. But then there's kind of like, that's kind of the top level of security. And then there's kind of other aspects of data security that are, you know, kind of much less scrutinized. And so things like loyalty programs and things like that are very valuable to you as a company. And I think that like those are data elements that are kind of again, like just like use common sense in the way that you transfer that data to your vendor and like know what they're going to do with it. You can ask your vendor for a certificate of destruction for like after they do a project. And then kind of like having them walk through what they actually did with your data, and having, you know, like the different software companies that you work with, if it's your point of sale company to your loyalty platform to, you know, data vendor to programmatic media buying, having them talk to each other and having them kind of be familiar with what you're trying to do. So like treat this in a more holistic way and then break down those silos.
Yeah. So if you think about it, I would say a good way to think about it is like the whole journey of the data. If you need to think about it from the beginning to the end. At the beginning, you're going to collect some information. You should have a privacy policy of some sort with your customer or consumer, where you're outlining, hey, I'm going to have access to this data that you're giving me, and here's what I'm going to do with it. Then when you start transporting that data to other people to append it or to use it for targeting or something else, the other entity or vendor that you work with, they should have something that is called a data processing agreement or something along those lines that outlines what their rights are. Because once you send information to someone, you should have a clear understanding of how they're going to store that data, what they're going to do with it. Do they have the ability to resell it? And what happens when, you know, the use case is over? Is that how are they going to destroy the data or return it to you? So if you think about collecting a person's identity, if you are a retailer, you need to understand the entry point and then everywhere that it can go along the lines. One of the problems with sending data files via email, it's not necessarily that email itself is inherently insecure. It's the fact that email sits now in someone's inbox. Most people use their inbox as their database. And so then you've got this file floating around. It could be on someone's laptop. So you really want to think about where it is going to be at all times. So
now, and also when if you think about an email, it's like, if you think about what like a Dropbox or box.com, that is kind of like multiple endpoints accessing one place. An email, when you send that, you're creating kind of almost three different versions of the file. There's now the original version, and now there's one in your sent box, and then one in the other person's inbox. And if they file it, so it's like a exponential growth of the placement of where that data lives. That's also just like problematic, because it just, like Jake said, like the wrong click of a send kind of can be catastrophic. So
yeah. Okay, so now that we've covered the sort of boring warning stuff of what you should and shouldn't do, and again, you should get legal advice on all of this. These are sort of broad descriptions we're giving here, and neither of us are lawyers, as far as I know. So now let's talk about what you can do with the data.
Yeah, right? I mean, so like, look, this shouldn't be scary at all. actually, it should be a really great way to have a view of your customer. And it's also like, if you think about the way that we think about business, this is actually a really valuable asset to your company. And it's one that should be maintained as such. So like the maintenance of that data is super, super important. So say you've gone through the steps of unsiloing your software, and you have your point of sale that is being synced now with your loyalty platform, that's being synced with kind of any other software that you're using for text messaging and things like that. And you have all this data flowing back, and you have Matt Taverna, and he comes in, and I have been the model customer. I've signed up for all the things, and I order online, and you know every SKU that I bought. So what can you do with that? You can create profiles of folks. So I think a really good way to think about this is like, think about in the traditional CPG sense, like where you've done this before. And one thing, so like, it's like a very high end, like a Bloomingdale's card, right? It's like the highest end thing. It's like my mom had one, and it was like a very special thing when we did that on Christmas time. And Bloomingdale's they're tracking this stuff, and they send you these magazines, and they send you this engagement, and they want you to come in, and it's like, oh, come in early, and we're going to open early for you. We'll open late, and we'll give you a shopper. And those are some of the things they do to entice people in. And it's not only because they know your past history, but they know that there are people like you that have done this as well. So they what they've done is they've taken your data, and they look at, you know, if it's Matt Taverna, 42-year-old male, they'll look at my record and they see, oh, I bought a coat last Christmas. But you know, what do other 42-year-old men buy at Bloomingdale's? And they can compare and contrast customer records. And they'll say, well, this is what the 42-year-old male profile looks like. This guy bought a coat. Let's sell him a suitcase next time. And so that, you know, with cannabis, you're doing the same thing. You can create customer profiles of, looking at customer behaviors. And this is something that the cannabis data community, places like New Frontier Data, have done have done really well in a holistic way. And then, so using your first party data to continue to enrich that type of data is just like makes it invaluable because it makes it specific to your store. So if you know what does a 42-year-old male do in my store, that's really like in important data because it can begin to not only be directional on your customer outreach. So you know if I go and buy a 3-pack of pre-rolls every Friday, it's the no-brainer to send me the 3-pack of pre-rolls. But then you can look at like what else do you think I should be buying? What else does the 42 or 35 to 45-year-old male, what do they buy? Let's sell Matt that. And so you go from I think the downward spiral of the discount code to like the upward spiral of an upsell. So hopefully I won't be buying the 3-pack of pre-rolls. I'll be buying more just because you can kind of assume certain things. Because I think the one thing to know in human behavior that I've found with data is the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So, and that not only applies to the individual, but it applies to if you can create profiles that are accurate enough to kind of make these predictions. And then, so tapping into your first party data is a great way to do that. And so that's like creating the profile, right? Having the ability to have all the contact information attached to it, things like address, email address, phone number, is a way then to engage not only through traditional means, texting and email, but that what's being continued to be opening up wider and wider is to traditional advertising, but I guess not like traditional digital advertising that other CPG brands use. And having that contact information links, you can link that to certain digital elements like connected TV, certain apps, and certain other web platforms that are actually quite open to taking cannabis ads these days. And there are many companies, MediaGel is included, obviously, that can do that work now. And there are there's a strong industry effort. If you look at the Cannabis Media Council, the Cannabis Marketing Association, entities that are like have a strong interest in helping to achieve like the normalization of not only like the cannabis media, but the entire workflow. So like from the what you're doing with your data, making that actionable. So it's something that's like top of mind.
Sure. So the other thing that allows you to do what you're mentioning is, okay, so this is what I know about my existing customer and their behavior. Here is how I can potentially look at my own data and say, this person is similar to this other person. So I should give them this offer because we see that it works with this cohort. Now, by taking your first party data, having it organized, and then leveraging data services like Statera or some of the things you do with MediaGel, you can then look at the broader audience of people that are not yet your customers, right? Because right. You have a finite number of the people in market that you know who they are. But if you say, okay, I know that 42-year-old males that live in this zip code or have these other demographic profiles, homeowner versus not homeowner, political affiliation, there's a whole bunch of dimensions that you can measure people on. You can take your existing customers, and then you can connect that with the larger data set that's available that is, well established within the CPG industry, and find people that are in your market that have those same similar demographic traits, and then advertise to them, right? So this is for new customer acquisition, where you can make your targeted digital advertising more effective because you're targeting people that you know, or that, but that have they over-index for a specific type of product. So that allows you to do things like say, okay, we've got 1,000, I'm just gonna use round numbers. So we have 1,000 customers, and we know that there's a cohort of them that are in this age group, and they tend to buy 3-packs of pre-rolls, right? And so we know that there's an affinity for that particular product. Okay, so let's build a campaign that is advertising that specific product to everyone that is in your radius that you want to be marketing to, in your location that matches that same demographic profile, you're going to see a better return on investment when you're doing marketing that way.
Right. And I think, just like if you're thinking on a medium to long term, you begin to engage with folks that are, have a, like we would call like a propensity to be a buyer or a customer that, you know, that's never been talked to before. And I think that, there's a wealth of information out there that says that the cannabis industry is a little bit of a plateau right now. And part of that's because of, you know, regulation and the stifling that way, but like talking to customers, talking to potential customers and the education on how to actually go to a dispensary, can be a great way of just getting people in the door. And so like knowing how to do that and not just kind of throwing your money into the ether, having targeted communications based on your own data, is the best way to start. Actually talking to customers, asking them to come into your store. I think it's like sometimes we lose focus in that, like if you're under the age of 25 or 35, it might be a scary experience to go into a dispensary just because when you were a kid, like this was all prohibited. So coming out of prohibition, knowing that targeted group of customers and having the golden nuggets in your own hands of like your own customer data and being able to build those audiences and build that communication is really important. And it's a way not only to enrich like your own customer base, but it's like it grows the industry as a whole.
Yeah. And, you know, there's many schools of thought that count your first party data as the only true piece of evergreen IP that you have,
right?
Meaning it's an asset that you own as a business. You can keep using it in different ways to provide value for yourself without using it up, right? It doesn't get used up. You can continue to use it. And, you know, this is the reason why frequently Facebook advertising works so well or has worked so well in the past. It's a little different now, but it's because Facebook knows all this information about their customers, Facebook users. Now, in this case, by building your own first party data set, having custody of it, enriching it, appending it, doing all the different things you can, you're in control of your own destiny a little more because now you are the owner of that customer record and you're not reliant on Facebook or another party to be able to reach that audience. You know, they make it pretty easy. You could say, oh, I want to target people in Facebook that match this basic profile. This is the same tools, right, that we're providing.
Right.
But now you own the tools. You're not renting them from Facebook and allows you to do a lot more with it.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it starts with just the ability to really begin to tapping into, like, I think the more knowledge you have about your customer, the more knowledge you have about your own brand. And just like it's an upward spiral of success. There is that like what is really special about your dispensary that people like, and you can begin to make those observations based on like a holistic view of your customer's base. Rather than just again having the weekly discounts, is there another special aspect of your dispensary and the products you're bringing in, and the way you're presenting this stuff that actually makes people come back, that makes a cart size get bigger or smaller if you're not offering a certain product that week, and so like being able to actually have a view of who's doing what when, at the individual level again. I think is invaluable. And so then Jake talks about like about the value of an asset. When I worked in politics, a lot of the time you have to kind of assign values to a lot of the things that, you know, political campaigns are working on. So one of the things that at the end of a campaign you assign value to is the data that the campaign's sitting on. And so companies do this as well. CPG companies traditionally have a value assigned to their customer list. And so if you're sitting on several hundred thousand customers, even if you're sitting on tens of thousands of customers, that data in and of itself is a valuable asset to your company. And you can include that into, you know, evaluation. If we, you know, if we want to talk about the business aspect of, you know, knowing what your business is worth, because obviously like a customer that comes in once a week, a customer that comes in once a month, makes a big purchase, is a valuable thing to know about. And then like, you know, the trends you can build on top of that, you know, with the right marketing behind it, can be invaluable. I mean, it's so, I mean, which kind of like brings us full circle into how important it is to, like, I think the one thing that people should be most cautious about is the lack of maintenance on the type of data that we're talking about. And once you kind of learn how to do the maintenance and just to keep that cycle of maintenance up, it's not something you can kind of do once in a while. It's like a marathoner can't train for a marathon by running 10 miles once a month. You need to do it every day.
I don't know. I've seen some Instagram posts. People claim they can do that. I'm joking about that. But when you say maintenance, we're talking about what exactly?
Yeah. So yeah, like once, so you have the pie in the sky, you have 100,000 customers and you have maintained it and you are rolling and you're growing your customer list. What do you do then on a daily, weekly, monthly basis? You have to look to see if people have moved. So there's like, you know, the U.S. Postal Service has like a national change of address service you can run on that. Cetera offers that service. You can see if people have changed their phone number. Because, you know, people change their cell phone if they move, or they change their cell phone if they just use a prepaid phone. And so maintaining that just like kind of base level contact information is important. But also there's times when you can just actually ask a customer in an email. Like, you don't have to always offer them a discount or offer them a business proposition. You can ask them to update. Hey, what do you like about hearing from us? Can you give us your address again? Do you want to hear from us still? Give people the chance to engage with you at a more personal level. And like, that's not possible if you don't have accurate data and you don't have like the unsiloed data to actually make those asks.
Yeah, you see that commonly with many consumer apps. I think probably the most common one you see is like banking apps or credit card apps, where you sign in and every few months they ask you things like, you know, what is your household income, or is this still the right contact info? And that's them doing maintenance on their data, making sure that they have accurate information.
Yep.
All right. So we do have a Q&A here in the Zoom thing. If anyone has questions, you can type your questions in here and we will do our best to answer them. Again, neither of us are lawyers, so don't give us contracts to read, but happy to answer any questions that anyone has. So we've got probably about 10 more minutes here. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about using data to make decisions on marketing. You mentioned, you know, it's very common within the cannabis industry to offer discounts as a way of getting people in the door. And it is a good tool, but it's a hammer, right? So it definitely has an effect when you hit people with large discounts. But you can use your data to understand which of your customers you can engage with and drive retention or upsells that don't necessarily require a discount, right? And that's an area where you can get better margins from your existing customers. So maybe you could talk through an example of how someone would do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes to creating what we would call like a list segmentation. So taking your list, again, let's use 100,000 people just because it's a nice round number, and say you have really good a way of maintaining what SKUs that people are buying, and what way, you know, categorizing the actual spend per visit. So you can categorize people in a few different ways. How often they visit, you can categorize how much money they spend when they visit, or you can categorize how much what products they buy. And then you can, so if it's like how often they visit, you can see, you know, if you have a date for when somebody made an online order and then came in and picked it up or had delivery, you can go back to your email and say, did a massive purchase happen when, you know, like connect it back to your like actual marketing and say, which of these 100,000 that were affected by that discount email? And because you have the SKUs lined up to an individual, you can see like pretty clearly if like that person came, if a person came in that day when they you sent that email, like, or that week, right, in discount email. Or if you announce a new product that was kind of more a more high-end product, more expensive. If someone actually if you communicated that out in an email or a text or a digital campaign, and you can actually look at a date and see that person bought a one of those higher end products on that day, you can attribute that back to a campaign. Oh. Then you begin to segment the data. So you can look at, hey, this is a high end group of buyers. This is definitely a discount group of buyers. This is a group that, you know, they come in once a month and they buy a pack of edibles. And like, then it again, it kind of begins to kind of build efficiencies throughout everything you're doing, because you can take your marketing and say, look, there's 50,000 people that we shouldn't put on a discount campaign.
Right.
Here's 30,000 people that we shouldn't try to sell beverages to, because they've never bought beverages. This guy buys pre-rolls every Friday night. He's not going to come in and buy beverages one day. Or he might, but we shouldn't be spending money to try to make that case, because that's not a good use of our budget at this time.
Yeah. Another thing that we've seen is, if you are doing discounts, what is that discount? Right. So there, you know, are you offering a 10%, 20%, 30%? I've seen people do all the way up to 40%, depending on what their goals are. But understanding who you should be offering discounts to, and even in terms of what product is being featured within the creative, right? So if you know what people tend to purchase, right? Okay, so this cohort, we're using pre-rolls, this cohort of people here.
I love pre-rolls, by the way. That's how I keep.
So I'll put you in the target for that. Yeah. So this cohort here, we know that they purchase pre-rolls. So let's target a set of creatives, the actual ad units themselves that feature a picture of pre-rolls. Assuming you're in a state where that's allowed, you can't always use pictures of products, but let's just say you're in a state where that's allowed. And then the next dimension is, how much of a discount do we want to offer them, right? So you can further segment that group into these people we know engage when we do a 25%. Usually, like, there's a big psychological difference between like a 15% and a 25% off, right? But people have different psychologies. So you inside of that group of people, some people will find 15% off to be more meaningful. And it may be because they make larger purchases, right? So when you do the internal math, you say, okay, when I go in, I'm going to spend $150, or let's say $100. That means, oh, 15%, I'm going to save $15. Then you equate that to, oh, well, basically I'm getting a whole free set of pre-rolls in my mind. Whereas if you have someone who makes smaller purchases, say they're coming in and spending $30, 15% of $30 is less meaningful than 30% of $30, right? So being able to understand the data that you get from your customers on what they're purchasing and what they're interacting with will allow you can make more money as a business without actually having to necessarily acquire new customers. Obviously, you want to acquire new customers, but what I'm specifically talking about right now is using data to increase your margins from your existing flow of customers.
Right. And then, and it's also just like connecting, because I think that's like one of the things I think that is done really well is knowing by cannabis companies is like knowing the inventories and the product side. I think that's actually done pretty well, But then connecting that back to your customer base and making it like truly actionable rather than just like on stock and what's going to be in your inventory is something that like can be done with like the good maintenance of first party data and connecting that back to like the actual SKUs that individuals are buying based on that those the inventory conversations.
So great. Well, lots of useful stuff here. We're wrapping up on time here. Do you have any last bits of advice or nuggets of information you want to share?
No, just a shout out to the Massachusetts cannabis market. I moved from Boston, Mass. It's one of the unsung gems of the cannabis industry here in the United States. And I'm in Maryland now, and I'm gonna learn that industry as well, but it's just birthed on the adult use level, and happy to be in Maryland as well. So
have you been into a adult use dispensary in Maryland?
Not yet. So
do you know how close the nearest one is?
It's like 10 minutes away.
All right. Well, you'll have to report back and see how it compares to Boston. There's obviously massive differences in each market between, you know, what the dispensary experience is like. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time. Matt, how can people reach you if they want to get more information or ask you
anything? Yeah, I mean, hit me up on LinkedIn if you found me there. Matt Taverna. I'm also at matt@statera.com. And we will be in touch. But again, I assume you reached us on LinkedIn. I will respond to any and all messages there, and as well as my email. So
great. Yep. Thank you so much. This is Jake Litke, CEO of MediaGel, signing off for Cannabis Marketing Live. Everyone have a great weekend.
Thank you, Jake. Bye.